Humbly I prostrate myself before the Buddhas of the Ten Quarters and the excellent company of Bodhisattvas. In setting forth this treatise, I am apprehensive that I may fail correctly to interpret the sacred mind. If so, may I be given a chance for repentance and reform. However, if I do succeed in imparting the sacred truth, I dedicate the resultant merit to all living beings, in the hope that each of them will attain Buddhahood in their next life. Question: what method must we practice in order to attain deliverance? Answer: it can be attained only through a sudden illumination. Question: what is a sudden illumination? Answer: sudden means ridding yourselves of deluded thoughts instantaneously. Illumination means the realization that illumination is not something to be attained. Question: from where do we start this practice? Answer: you must start from the very root. Question: and what is that? Answer: mind is the root. Question: how can this be known? Answer: the Lankavatara Sutra says, when mental processes arise, then do all dharmas spring forth. And when mental processes cease, then do all dharmas cease likewise. The Vimalakirti Sutra says, those desiring to attain the Pure Land must first purify their own minds, for the purification of mind is the purity of the Buddha Land. The Sutra of the Doctrine Bequeathed by the Buddha says, just by mind control, all things become possible to us. In another sutra, it says, sages seek from mind, not from the Buddha. Fools seek from the Buddha instead of seeking from mind. Wise men regulate their minds rather than their persons. Fools regulate their persons rather than their minds. The Sutra of the Names of the Buddha states, evil springs forth from the mind, and by mind is evil overcome. Thus, we may know that all good and evil proceed from our minds, and that mind is therefore the root. If you desire deliverance, you must first know all about the root. Unless you can penetrate this truth, all your efforts will be in vain, for while you are seeking something from forms external to yourself, you will never attain. The Dhyana Paramita Sutra says, for as long as you direct your search to the forms around you, you will not attain your goal, even after aeon upon aeon. Whereas, by contemplating your inner awareness, you can achieve Buddhahood in a single flash of thought. Question: by what means is the root practice to be performed? Answer: only by sitting in meditation, for it is accomplished by dhyana and samadhi. The Dhyana Paramita Sutra says, dhyana and samadhi are essential to the search for the sacred knowledge of the Buddhas, for without these, the thoughts remain in tumult and the roots of goodness suffer damage. Question: please describe dhyana and samadhi. Answer: when wrong thinking ceases, that is dhyana. When you sit contemplating your original nature, that is samadhi, for indeed, that original nature is your eternal mind. By samadhi, you withdraw your minds from their surroundings, thereby making them impervious to the eight winds, that is to say, impervious to gain and loss, calumny and eulogy, praise and blame, sorrow and joy. By concentrating in this way, even ordinary people may enter a state of Buddhahood. How can that be so? The Sutra of the Bodhisattva Precept says, all beings who observe the Buddha precept thereby enter Buddhahood. Other names for this are deliverance, gaining the further shore, transcending the six states of mortal being, overleaping the three worlds, becoming a mighty bodhisattva, an omnipotent sage, a conqueror. Question: whereon should the mind settle and dwell? Answer: it should settle upon non-dwelling and there dwell. Question: what is this non-dwelling? Answer: it means not allowing the mind to dwell upon anything whatsoever. Question: and what is the meaning of that? Answer: dwelling upon nothing means that the mind is not fixed upon good or evil, being or non-being, inside or outside, or somewhere in between the two, void or non-void, concentration or distraction. This is the state in which it should dwell. Those who attain to it are said to have non-dwelling minds. In other words, they have Buddha minds. Question. What does mind resemble? Answer. Mind has no colour, such as green or yellow, red or white. It is not long or short. It does not vanish or appear. It is free from purity and impurity alike, and its duration is eternal. It is utter stillness. Such, then, is the form and shape of our original mind, which is also our original body. Question. By what means do this body or mind perceive? Can they perceive with the eyes, ears, nose, sense of touch and consciousness? Answer. No, there are not several means of perception like that. Question. Then what sort of perception is involved, since it is unlike any of those already mentioned? Answer. It is perception by means of our own nature. How so? Because your own nature, being essentially pure and utterly still, its immaterial and motionless substance is capable of this perception. Question. Yet, since that pure substance cannot be found, where does such perception come from? Answer. We may liken it to a bright mirror which, though it contains no forms, can nevertheless perceive all forms. Why? Just because it is free from mental activity. If you students of the way had minds unstained, they would not give rise to falsehood, and their attachment to the subjective ego and to objective externals would vanish. Then purity would arise of itself, and you would thereby be capable of such perception. The Dhammapada says, to establish ourselves amid perfect voidness in a single flash is excellent wisdom indeed. Question. According to the Vajrabodhi chapter of the Mahaparinirvana Sutra, the indestructible diamond body is imperceptible, yet it clearly perceives. It is free from discerning, and yet there is nothing which it does not comprehend. What does this mean? Answer. It is imperceptible because its own nature is a formless substance which is intangible. Hence it is called imperceptible. And since it is intangible, this substance is observed to be profoundly still, neither vanishing nor appearing. Though not apart from our world, it cannot be influenced by the worldly stream. It is self-possessed and sovereign, which is the reason why it clearly perceives. It is free from discerning, in that its own nature is formless and basically undifferentiated. Its comprehending everything means that the undifferentiated substance is endowed with functions as countless as the sands of Ganges, and if all phenomena were to be discerned simultaneously, it would comprehend all of them without exception. In the Prajnagata it is written, Prajna, unknowing, knoweth all. Prajna, unseeing, seeth all. Question. There is a sutra which says that not to perceive anything in terms of being or non-being is true deliverance. What does it mean? Answer. When we attain to purity of mind, there is something which can be said to exist. When this happens, our remaining free from any thought of achievement is called not perceiving anything as existent. While reaching a state in which no thoughts arise or persist, yet without being conscious of their absence, is called not perceiving anything as non-existent. So it is written, not to perceive anything in terms of being and non-being. The Shurangama Sutra says, perceptions employed as a base for building up positive concepts are the origin of all ignorance. Perception that there is nothing to perceive, that is nirvana, also known as deliverance. Question. What is the meaning of nothing to perceive? Answer. Being able to behold men, women, and all the various sorts of appearances, while remaining as free from love or aversion as if they were actually not seen at all. That is what is meant by nothing to perceive. Question. That which occurs when we are confronted by all sorts of shapes and forms is called perception. Can we speak of perception taking place when nothing confronts us? Answer. Yes. Question. When something confronts us, it follows that we perceive it. But how can there be perception when we are confronted by nothing at all? Answer. We are now talking of that perception which is independent of there being an object or not. How can that be? The nature of perception, being eternal, we go on perceiving whether objects are present or not. Thereby, we come to understand that, whereas objects naturally appear and disappear, the nature of perception does neither of those things, and it is the same with all your other senses. Question. When we are looking at something, does the thing looked at exist objectively within the sphere of perception or not? Answer. No, it does not. Question. When we look around and do not see anything, is there an absence of something objective within the sphere of perception? Answer. No, there is not. Question. When there are sounds, hearing occurs. When there are no sounds, does hearing persist or not? Answer. It does. Question. When there are sounds, it follows that we hear them. But how can hearing take place during the absence of sound? Answer. We are now talking of that hearing which is independent of there being any sound or not. How can that be? The nature of hearing being eternal, we continue to hear whether sounds are present or not. Question. If that is so, who or what is the hearer? Answer. It is your own nature which hears, and it is the inner cognizer who knows. Question. As to the gateway of sudden illumination, what are its doctrine, its aim, its substance, and its function? Answer. To refrain from thinking is its doctrine. Not to allow wrong thoughts to arise is its aim. Purity is its substance, and wisdom is its function. Question. We have said that its doctrine is to refrain from thinking, but we have not yet examined the meaning of this term. What is it that we must refrain from thinking about? Answer. It means that we must refrain from wrong thinking, but not from right thinking. Question. What are wrong thinking and right thinking? Answer. Thinking in terms of being a non-being is called wrong thinking, while not thinking in those terms is called right thinking. Similarly, thinking in terms of good and evil is wrong. Not to think so is right thinking. The same applies to all the other categories of opposites. Sorrow and joy, beginning and end, acceptance and rejection, dislikes and likes, aversion and love, all of which are called wrong thinking. Well, to abstain from thinking in those categories is called right thinking. Question. Please define right thinking more positively. Answer. It means thinking solely of Bodhi. Question. Is Bodhi something tangible? Answer. It is not. Question. But how can we think solely of Bodhi if it is intangible? Answer. It is as though Bodhi were a mere name applied to something which, in fact, is intangible, something which never has been or ever will be attained. Being intangible, it cannot be thought about. It is just this not thinking about it, which is called rightly thinking of Bodhi as something not to be thought about. For this implies that your mind dwells upon nothing whatever. The term, not to be thought about, is like the various kinds of not thinking mentioned earlier, all of which are but names convenient for use in certain circumstances. All are of the one substance in which no differences or diversities exist. Simply to be conscious of mind as resting upon nothing whatsoever is to be without thought, and whoever reaches this state is naturally delivered. Question. What is the meaning of to act as the Buddhas do? Answer. It means total abstention from action, which is also termed right or holy action. It is very similar to what we were talking about before, for it means not acting as if things really are or are not, and not acting from motives of aversion, love, and all the rest. The great canon of monastic rules says, "The sages do not act like other beings, nor do other beings act like the sages." Question. What does right perception mean? Answer. It means perceiving that there is nothing to perceive. Question. What does that mean? Answer. It means beholding all sorts of forms, but without being stained by them, as no thoughts of love or aversion arise in the mind. Reaching this state is called obtaining the Buddha eye, which really means just that and nothing else. Whereas, if the spectacle of various forms produces love or aversion in you, that is called perceiving them as though they had objective existence. which implies having the eye of an ordinary person, for indeed ordinary people have no other sort of eye. It is the same with all the other organs of perception. Question. When you said that wisdom is the function, what did you mean by wisdom? Answer. The knowledge that by realizing the voidness of all opposites, deliverance is assured, and that, without this realization, you will never gain deliverance. This is what we call wisdom, or knowing wrong from right. Another name for it is knowing the function of the substance. Concerning the unreality of opposites, it is the wisdom inherent in the substance, which makes it known that to realize their voidness means liberation, and there can be no more doubt about it. This is what we mean by function. In speaking thus of the unreality of opposites, we refer to the non-existence of relativities, such as is and is not, good and evil, love and aversion, and so on. Question. By what means can the gateway of our school be entered? Answer. By means of the Dana Paramita. Question. According to the Buddha, the Bodhisattva path comprises 6 paramitas. Why, then, have you mentioned only the one? Please explain why this one alone provides a sufficient means for us to enter. Answer. Deluded people fail to understand that the other 5 all proceed from Dana, and that by its practice all the others are fulfilled. Question. Why is it called the Dana Paramita? Answer. Dana means relinquishment. Question. Relinquishment of what? Answer. Relinquishment of the dualism of opposites. Question. Which means? Answer. It means total relinquishment of ideas as to the dual nature of good and bad, being and non-being, love and aversion, void and non-void, concentration and distraction, pure and impure. By giving all of them up, we attain to a state in which all opposites are seen as void. The real practice of the Dana Paramita entails achieving this state without any thought of, now I see that opposites are void, or now I have relinquished all of them. We may also call it the simultaneous cutting off of the myriad types of concurrent causes, for it is when these are cut off that the whole Dharma nature becomes void. And this voidness of the Dharma nature means the non-dwelling of the mind upon anything whatsoever. Once that state is achieved, not a single form can be discerned. Why? Because our self-nature is immaterial and does not contain a single thing. That which contains no single thing is true reality. The marvellous form of the Tathagata. It is said in the Diamond Sutra, those who relinquish all forms are called Buddhas. Question. However, the Buddha did speak of 6 paramitas, so why do you now say they can all be fulfilled in that one? Answer. The Sutra of the Questions of Brahma says, Bodhisattvas, by relinquishing all defilements, may be said to have fulfilled the Dana Paramita, also known as total relinquishment. Being beguiled by nothing, they may be said to have fulfilled the Sila Paramita, also known as observing the precepts. Being hurt by nothing, they may be said to have fulfilled the Kshanti Paramita, also known as exercising forbearance. Clinging to nothing, they may be said to have fulfilled the Vaya Paramita, also known as exercising zeal. Dwelling on nothing, they may be said to have fulfilled the Dhyana Paramita, also known as practicing Dhyana and Samadhi. Speaking lightly of nothing, they may be said to have fulfilled the Prajna Paramita, also known as exercising wisdom. Together, they are named the 6 methods. Now I am going to speak about those 6 methods in a way which means precisely the same. The first entails relinquishment. The second, non-arising of perception or sensation, etc. The third, non-thinking. The fourth, remaining apart from forms. The fifth, non-abiding of the mind. And the sixth, no indulgence in light speech. We give different names to these 6 methods, only for convenience in dealing with passing needs. For when we come to the marvellous principle involved in them all, we find no differences at all. So you have only to understand that by a single act of relinquishment, everything is relinquished, and that no arising means no rising of anything whatsoever. Those who have lost their way have no intuitive understanding of this. That is why they speak of the methods as though they differed from one another. Fools bogged down in the multiplicity of methods revolve endlessly from lifespan to lifespan. I exhort you, students, to practice the way of relinquishment, and nothing else, for it brings to perfection not only the other five paramitas, but also myriads of dharmas. Question. What are the three methods of training to be performed at the same level, and what is meant by performing them on the same level? Answer. They are discipline, concentration, and wisdom. Question. Please explain them one by one. Answer. Discipline involves stainless purity. Concentration involves the stilling of your minds so that you remain wholly unmoved by surrounding phenomena. Wisdom means that your stillness of mind is not disturbed by your giving any thought to that stillness, that your purity is unmarred by your entertaining any thought of purity, and that, in the midst of all such pairs of opposites as good and evil, you are able to distinguish between them without being stained by them, and, in this way, to reach the state of being perfectly at ease and free of all dependence. Furthermore, if you realize that discipline, concentration, and wisdom are all alike in that their substance is intangible, and that hence they are undivided and therefore one, that is what is meant by three methods of training performed at the same level. Question. When the mind rests in a state of purity, will that not give rise to some attachment to purity? Answer. If on reaching the state of purity you refrain from thinking, "Now my mind is resting in purity," there will be no such attachment. Question. When the mind rests in a state of void, will that not entail some attachment to void? Answer. If you think of your mind as resting in a state of void, then there will be such an attachment. Question. When the mind reaches this state of non-dwelling upon anything, and continues in that state, will there not be some attachment to its non-dwelling upon anything? Answer. So long as your mind is fixed solely on void, there is nothing to which you can attach yourself. If you want to understand the non-dwelling mind very clearly, while you are actually sitting in meditation, you must be cognizant only of the mind and not permit yourself to make judgments. That is, you must avoid evaluations in terms of good, evil, or anything else. Whatever is past, so do not sit in judgment upon it. For when minding about the past ceases of itself, it can be said that there is no longer any past. Whatever is in the future is not here yet, and so do not direct your hopes and longings towards it. For when minding about the future ceases of itself, it can be said that there is no future. Whatever is present is now at hand. Just be conscious of your non-attachment to everything. Non-attachment in the sense of not allowing any love or aversion for anything to enter your mind. For when minding the present ceases of itself, we may say that there is no present. When there is no clinging to any of those three periods, they may be said not to exist. Should your mind wander away, do not follow it, whereupon your wandering mind will stop wandering of its own accord. Should your mind desire to linger somewhere, do not follow it and do not dwell there, whereupon your mind's questing for a dwelling place will cease of its own accord. Thereby you will come to possess a non-dwelling mind, a mind that remains in a state of non-dwelling. If you are fully aware in yourself of a non-dwelling mind, you will discover that there is just the fact of dwelling, with nothing to dwell upon or not to dwell upon. This full awareness in yourself of a mind dwelling upon nothing is known as having a clear perception of your own mind, or, in other words, as having a clear perception of your own nature. A mind which dwells upon nothing is the Buddha mind, the mind of one already delivered, Bodhi mind, uncreate mind. It is also called realization that the nature of all appearances is unreal. It is this which the sutras call patient realization of the uncreate. If you have not realized it yet, you must strive and strive, you must increase your exertions. Then, when your efforts are crowned with success, you will have attained to understand from within yourself. An understanding stemming from a mind that abides nowhere, by which we mean a mind free from delusion and reality alike. A mind disturbed by love and aversion is deluded. A mind free from both of them is real. A mind thus freed reaches the state in which opposites are seen as void, whereby freedom and deliverance are obtained.